Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
School of Humans. This episode discusses sensitive topics. Please listen with care. My name is Miranda Hawkins. Welcome to the Deep Dark Woods. Today's episode is ATU 955, or The Robber Bridegroom.
Once upon a time, there was a miller who had a beautiful daughter. When she came of age, he wished that she was provided for and well married. He thought, if a respectable suitor comes and asks for her hand in marriage, I will give her to him. Not long afterwards, a suitor came who appeared to be very rich. And because the girl, however, did not like him as much as a bride should like her bridegroom, she did not trust him. And whenever she saw him or thought about him, she felt within her heart a sense of horror. One time he said to her, "You are engaged to marry me, but you have never once paid me a visit." The girl replied, "I don't know where your house is." Then the bridegroom said, "My house is out in the dark woods." Looking for an excuse, she said she would not be able to find the way there. The bridegroom said, "Next Sunday, you must come out to me. I have already invited guests. I will make a trail of ashes so that you can find your way through the woods." When Sunday came and it was time for the girl to start on her way, she became frightened, although she herself did not know exactly why. In order to mark the path, she filled both her pockets full of peas and lentils. At the entrance of the forest, there was a trail of ashes, which she followed. But at every step, she threw a couple of peas onto the ground, to the right and to the left. She walked almost the whole day until she came to the middle of the woods, where it was the darkest. And there stood a solitary house. She did not like it because it looked so dark and sinister. She went inside, but no one was there. It was totally quiet. Suddenly, a voice called out, turn back, you young bride. You are in a murderer's house." The girl looked up and saw that the voice came from a bird, which was hanging in a cage on the wall. It cried out again, turn back, you young bride. You are in a murderer's house." The beautiful bride went from one room to another, walking through the whole house, but it was empty. Not a human soul was to be found. Finally, she came to a cellar. A very old woman was sitting there, shaking her head. "Could you tell me," said the girl, "if my bridegroom lives here?" "Oh, you poor child," replied the old woman. "Where did you come from? You are in a murderer's den. You think you are a bride soon to be married, but it is death that you will be marrying. Look, they made me put a large kettle of water on the fire. When they have captured you, they will chop you to pieces without mercy, cook you, and eat you, for they are cannibals. If I do not show you compassion and save you, you are doomed. With this, the old woman led her behind a large barrel where she could not be seen. Be quiet as a mouse, she said. Do not make a sound or move, or all will be over for you. Tonight, when the robbers are asleep, we will escape. I have long waited for an opportunity. This had scarcely happened when the godless band came home. They were dragging with them another maiden. They were drunk and paid no attention to her screams and sobs. They gave her wine to drink, 3 glasses full. One glass of white, one glass of red, and one glass of yellow, which caused her heart to break. Then they ripped off her fine clothes, laid her on the table, chopped her beautiful body in pieces, and sprinkled salt on it. The poor bride behind the barrel trembled and shook, for she saw well what fate the robbers had planned for her. One of them noticed a gold ring on the murdered girl's little finger. Because it did not come off, he took an axe and chopped the finger off. But it flew into the air and over the barrel, falling right into the bride's lap. The robber took a light and looked for it, but could not find it. Then another one said, "Did you look behind the large barrel?" But the old woman cried out, "Come and eat. You can continue looking in the morning. That finger won't run away from you." Then the robber said, "The old woman's right." They gave up their search and they sat down to eat. The old woman poured a sleeping potion into their wine so that they soon lay down in the cellar and fell asleep, snoring. When the bride heard them snoring, she came out from behind the barrel and had to step over the sleepers, for they lay all in rows on the ground. She was afraid that she might awaken one of them, but God helped her, and she got through safely. The old woman went upstairs with her, opened the door, and they hurried out of the murderer's den as fast as they could. The wind had blown away the trail of ashes, but the peas and lentils had sprouted and grown up and showed them the way in the moonlight. They walked all night, arriving at the mill the next morning. Then, the girl told her father everything, just as it had happened. When the wedding day came, the bridegroom appeared. The miller had invited all his relatives and acquaintances. As they sat at the table, each one was asked to tell something. The bride sat still and said nothing. Then the bridegroom said to the bride, "Come, sweetheart, don't you know anything? Tell us something like the others have done." She answered, "Then I will tell about a dream. I was walking alone through the woods when finally I came to a house. Inside, there was not a single human soul, but on the wall there was a bird in a cage. It cried out, 'Turn back, you young bride, you are in a murderer's house.' Then it cried out the same thing again. Darling, it was only a dream. Then I went through all the rooms. They were all empty and there was something so eerie in there. Finally, I went down into the cellar, and there sat a very old woman shaking her head. She answered, 'Alas, poor child, you have gotten into a murderer's den. Your bridegroom does live here, but he intends to chop you to pieces and kill you, and then he intends to cook you and eat you.' Darling, it was only a dream." After that, the old woman hid me behind a large barrel. I had scarcely hidden myself there when the robbers came home, dragging a girl with them. They gave her 3 kinds of wine to drink, white, red, and yellow, which caused her heart to stop beating. "Darling, it was only a dream." After that, they took off her fine clothes and chopped her beautiful body to pieces on a table, then sprinkled salt on it.
"Darling, it was only a dream."
Then one of the robbers saw that there was still a ring on her finger. Because it was hard to get the ring off, he took an axe and chopped off the finger. The finger flew through the air behind the large barrel and fell into my lap. And here is the finger with the ring. With these words, she pulled out the finger and showed it to everyone who was there. The robber, who had, during this story, become white as chalk, jumped up and tried to escape, but the guests held him fast and turned him over to the courts. Then, he and his whole band were executed for their shameful deeds.
The robber bridegroom isn't as well known as the other tales we've talked about in this show. It was never picked up by Walt Disney or rewritten for a younger audience. In fact, it wasn't even popular during the Grimm's time. This story wasn't included in their 1825 collection. That was the year their tales began to gain popularity, and the story hasn't been found in collections targeted at children past 1960. Although the underlying theme is about marriage, some folklorists don't view the robber bridegroom as a fairy tale, but rather as a horror story. The robber bridegroom is one of the most violent tales by the Grimm brothers, which is impressive considering all of the violence we've already encountered, from Cinderella's stepsisters cutting off their feet, Rumpelstiltskin splitting in half, Little Red and her grandmother getting devoured by a wolf. And if you are reading this Grimm story in a book, it becomes even more horrific with the illustrations.
Fairy tales come with illustrations, and we often see that moment where all the characters are together being chosen as an illustrative moment, the moment to illustrate in a story.
This is folklorist Dr. Lynn McNeil.
And when we think about this scene in the house, in the middle of the woods, our young heroine is hiding behind some boxes, and there is just straight up butchery and debauchery happening in the same room as her. A woman is being murdered. She's being chopped up. Body parts are literally flying around the room. We can picture the bloody scene. And the moment they go looking and the old woman comes in and says, no, come and eat. Like, everyone's there together, right? And we have it all encapsulated, the violence, these bad people, the victim, the girl hiding, the tension, the woman trying to distract them. Like, that moment just brings all of these things together, and it's really visceral.
Clearly, the robber bridegroom is incredibly violent, with a gruesome murder and cannibalism. And Dr. McNeil says there's a specific reason why the Grimms did that. It was to make it extremely obvious that these men, including the future husband, are evil.
Fairy tales, by definition, are understood to be fairly simplistic structurally. These are some of the defining characteristics of these tales, is that they don't have long, ornate passages that describe in detail various things. So if you want something to have an impact, you have to make it pretty stark. We need our readers or listeners to know that these bad guys are bad. Like, they are not, ambiguously bad. They're not just sort of selfish and mean. These are the worst of the worst. That story has been being told for literal thousands of years about whoever it is that we want to be able to hate without nuance. And it's really interesting to see that motif crop up so that we don't have to think, we don't have to complicate these people. We can just hate them.
Another element that increases the suspense and horror of the story is that the merchant's daughter has to march into her fate despite the feeling of an ease she has. She has to marry this man her father found for her, and she has to go see her future husband's house. Similarly to how she couldn't escape without the old woman's help, she can't escape the will of the men in her life.
One of the tropes that we see here is how powerless women are at the hands of men. So her father encouraging her toward this marriage that she just does not feel good about. And then her husband-to-be encouraging her to make choices that her gut tells her do not feel good. Yeah, my house is in the middle of the woods. You should see it before we get married. Walk there alone at night through the forest. It'll be fine. All of these things are going against instinct. I think that we know historically that men making deals with other men about marriage is an incredibly common practice around the world. So a woman's father and a woman's future husband would often negotiate the terms of her marriage without her involvement at all. So that's not particularly surprising here. We do have the fairy tale elements of come into the woods, go against your instinct, put yourself in danger. And clearly, he has no good intent here at all. We get sort of that tension of a woman ostensibly behaving in a societally appropriate way, but knowing something is wrong.
The robber bridegroom is a disturbing tale indeed, and some people even consider it a gothic story instead of a simple fairy tale. In the time of Mary Shelley and Edgar Allan Poe, the word German evoked feelings of darkness and ominousness. And that's when the robber bridegroom entered the world. But let's look at the fairy tales. The robber bridegroom is one of many stories that features a murderous husband. And in one tale type, he's a serial killer.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
As with their other stories, the Brothers Grimm heard the robber bridegroom from Marie Hassenpflug, one of the sisters who was a descendant of French Huguenots. One tale that is closely related to the robber bridegroom is Bluebeard. It's a different tale type, ATU 312, but it could have possibly been the inspiration for the robber bridegroom. The Grimms wrote their own version of Bluebeard and included it in their first edition. But then they decided that the tale was too French and not authentically German enough for them to include in future editions. It was very similar to the tale by Charles Perrault, which was published in 1697. There's a rich man who is unlucky to have a blue beard, which makes him so ugly that all the ladies run from him. But one of his neighbors has two beautiful daughters, and he asks to have one of them as his bride. The two sisters send him back and forth between the two, neither one wanting him for his ugliness. Another reason neither sister wants to marry him is they know he has been previously married several times, but no one knows what's happened to those wives. To win their affection, Bluebeard decides to host the mother, daughters, and some of their friends and other neighbors at one of his country homes. The time is filled with parties, hunting, fishing, dancing, mirth, and feasting. Everything goes so well, the youngest daughter decides a Bluebeard isn't so bad after all, and that he is quite the gentleman. When everyone returns home, Bluebeard and the youngest daughter are married. A month later, Bluebeard announces he has to leave for 6 weeks to attend to important business. He tells her to keep herself entertained while he's gone by inviting her friends to the country house. He hands her a set of keys. One key unlocks great wardrobes where he keeps his best furniture. Another unlocks where he keeps his gold and silver plates. Another to his gold, silver, and jewels. And finally, the smallest key, which opens a little closet on the ground floor. He tells her she can open anything she wants, except for the small closet. If she does, she should expect his just anger. She promises to do as he says. Then he gets into his coach and leaves. Her neighbors and friends didn't wait for an invite to go to the country house with the new wife. They had been waiting for her husband to leave before visiting because they were still frightened of his beard. As the new wife begins unlocking everything, everyone is beside themselves with the treasures, for each finery surpasses the one before it. But the new bride can't wait and heads to the little door before the rest of the party. She thinks a moment about her husband's warning, but the temptation is too strong. She opens the door. It takes a minute because all the windows are shut, but after a few moments, she realizes the floors are covered in clotted blood. The room is filled with the bodies of Bluebeard's previous wives. Terrified, she drops the key. After somewhat recovering, she picks the key back up and locks the door again. The new wife notices there is blood on the key, but no matter how much she tries to wipe it off, the blood remains, for it's a magical key. Bluebeard returns from his journey that same evening. He had received letters while on the road informing him his business matters were concluded to his advantage. His new wife does all she can to convince him she's happy of his early return. The next morning, he asks for the keys. Her hands tremble so much he already knows she didn't obey. He asks why the small key isn't among the rest. She replies she does not know. He then pushes her to retrieve the key, which she does. When he asks why there's blood on the key, she cries, paler than death, "I do not know." "You do not know," replies Bluebeard. "I very well know. You went into the closet, did you not? Very well, madam. You shall go back and take your place among the ladies you saw there." The new wife begs Bluebeard to spare her, but he refuses. Perrault writes, "She would have melted a rock, so beautiful and sorrowful was she. But Bluebeard had a heart harder than any rock." The new wife convinces Bluebeard to give her time to pray before he kills her. He concedes and gives her half a quarter of an hour. The new wife calls up to her sister Anne, who is still at the country house. She asks Anne to climb to the top of the tower to see if her brothers are coming. They had made plans to arrive that day. And if Anne does see them, to give them a sign to make haste. 3 times does Anne see a cloud of dust, and 3 times it's not her brothers. On the 4th look, Anne sees 2 horsemen, but they're still a great way off. Bluebeard has no more patience and bawls so loudly that his distressed wife comes down and throws herself at his feet. He uses one hand to grab her hair and hold her head back, while the other hand holds a sword, poised to strike her head off. As he's about to kill her, there's such a loud knocking at the gate that Bluebeard stops. The gate opens and the 2 horsemen enter. Bluebeard recognizes it's his wife's 2 brothers, one who is a dragoon and the other a musketeer. and so he turns to flee to save himself. But the two brothers catch him and run their swords through him, leaving his body where he dies. Since Bluebeard has no heirs or mistress, all his fortune goes to his new wife. She uses part of it to marry her sister Anne to a young gentleman who has been in love with Anne for a while now. She uses another part to buy captain's commissions for her brothers. And the rest, she uses to marry herself to a worthy gentleman who in time makes her forget Bluebeard. Perrault's morals are a bit heavy-handed in this tale. He writes, "Curiosity, in spite of its appeal, often leads to deep regret. To the displeasure of many a maiden, its enjoyment is short-lived. Once satisfied, it ceases to exist and always costs dearly." Apply logic to this grim story and you will ascertain that it took place many years ago. No husband of our age would be so terrible as to demand the impossible for his wife, nor would he be such a jealous malcontent. For whatever the color of her husband's beard, the wife of today will let him know who the master is. On one hand, Perrault scolds women for their curiosity. On the other hand, he warns against controlling jealous husbands. Robbers with colorful beards aren't unusual, though, and appear in several other tales. Switching back to ATU 955, there's a Lithuanian tale published in 1857 titled Greenbeard. In the city, there is a wealthy merchant with a beautiful daughter. The girl says she will only marry a man with a green beard. In the woods surrounding the city, 24 robbers live together. The handsome captain says he wants to marry this girl, so he finds a dye to turn his beard green. After coloring his beard, the captain rides into the city and courts the merchant's daughter. She likes him so much that he spends the night. The next day, plans are made for her to visit him at his large mansion in the woods. He gives her directions, which she follows on horseback. The path becomes too narrow, so she dismounts her horse and continues on foot. Soon she comes upon a small house with two lions chained near the door. When she realizes they're not doing anything, she goes inside. She enters a room with beds and flintlocks hanging on the walls. Flintlocks are guns that use the striking of flint to fire. In the next room is a table with a bird in a cage hanging from the rafter. The little bird asks how she got in and tells her that robbers live there. The bird also warns if she tries to leave now, the lions will eat her, so she needs to hide under the bed until the robbers get drunk and pass out. Then as she leaves, she can throw a piece of cake to each lion and run away. The girl follows the bird's advice and crawls under the bed. When the robbers come home, one says it smells of human flesh. But the bird makes excuses, and the robbers stop asking questions. The robbers have brought home a girl with them. First, they eat dinner. Then they chop the other girl into pieces, starting with her fingers. The finger with the ring flies out of the carnage and lands beside the girl hiding under the bed. She puts it in her pocket. After the robbers drink themselves to sleep, the girl comes out from under the bed, feeds the bird some sugar, then feeds the lions a cake as she flees. But no sooner had she started running than the lions begin to roar, waking up the robbers. Knowing it's the merchant's daughter, they take after her, but she's already reached her horse and is riding safely home. Greenbeard cuts off his beard and devises a plan. He orders large wagons with large barrels for his men to hide in. He tells his men to stay hidden until he gives them a sign. Greenbeard goes to the merchant's house, pretending to be someone else. While the two are talking, one of the servants overhears the men whispering in the barrels and goes to tell the merchant. The merchant then forces Greenbeard to sit with a guard on each side while other men prepare to catch the hidden robbers. The merchant's daughter comes down and shows her father and Greenbeard the dead girl's finger with the ring. Greenbeard, knowing he's been caught, tries to run, but the guards hold him down. He and all his men are caught. The girl then leads people to the robber's house. She keeps the little bird, the merchant keeps the lions, the rest is divided among the poor, and the house is burnt down. The robbers all die in prison, and the merchant's daughter no longer has a desire to marry a man with a green beard. One of the morals is to warn women to not be so picky about who they marry. But not all of these tales are about marriage. One of my favorites, and perhaps the saddest story I ran across in this tale type, is a Romanian story written by Moses Gastor, published in 1915. A poor orphan girl works as a servant for a rich man. Her dearest companion is a little dog her parents had given her before they died. One day, the head of a robber band disguises himself as a servant and asks her to marry him. Feeling something sinister about the man, the girl refuses. The chieftain has his fellow robbers kidnap the girl and her dog. But although she is trapped in his home, the girl still refuses to marry him. Fed up, the head of the robbers sells her to an innkeeper. This innkeeper robs and kills travelers and then serves their flesh to his other customers. He terrorizes the girl by showing her the stolen valuables, the room where he murders people, and the weapons he uses for his violent crimes. Later, he brings her a little boy who he has captured. He cuts the little boy's head off before cutting the rest of him to pieces. The innkeeper then forces the girl to cook the boy's flesh and serve it to the guests. Sometime later, an old, wrinkled, ugly woman shows up. She's nothing but skin and bones. Maybe wanting to fatten her up to eat, the innkeeper locks her in the room with the girl. Turns out, it's the innkeeper's mother who has come to punish him for his wickedness. She tells the girl that to escape, she has to eat a piece of her dog's heart, which the girl does. Then the woman rubs ointment all over the girl's body, which transforms her into a duck. A little later, when the man opens the door, the girl flies out to safety. The innkeeper runs from room to room looking for the girl. Meanwhile, his mother mutters a magic curse that causes the inn to collapse, killing the man at once. The girl turns around and sees the ruins. She's free, but since the witch never told her how to become human again, the story says she remains a duck to this very day. While each story has commonalities, there are different levels of violence to them. But what about the Brothers Grimm story? As it turns out, they didn't shy away from the darkness.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at viking.com.
Thank you. The version of the robber bridegroom you heard at the beginning of the episode was from 1819. But that's not the first time they published the story. The first one, published in 1812, is very different. And while most of the time the Grimm brothers sanitized their stories to be more appropriate for children, they didn't do that for the robber bridegroom. In the 1812 version, instead of a merchant's daughter, there's a princess. And she is set to marry a prince. The prince tells her to visit him in the castle in the woods. The princess says she was afraid of losing her way, but the prince says he would tie a ribbon to the trees to help her find her way. When she runs out of excuses, the princess agrees. The princess comes upon a large house the evening she goes to visit the prince, and an old woman sits outside. The woman says it is a good thing the princess has arrived while no one else is home, because the prince and his robber gang are planning on eating her. The old woman tells the princess to go hide behind the large barrel in the cellar. Just then, the prince and robbers arrive with another old woman. This woman is the princess's grandmother. The robbers murder her. After the grandmother is dead, they take off her rings, but the ring on her ring finger refuses to come off, so they take a knife and hack it off. The finger flies behind the barrel into the princess's lap. The prince and robbers decide to look for it the next morning. After everyone falls asleep, the princess sneaks out of the prince's castle and uses the ribbons to find her way home in the dark. She then tells her father everything. He immediately orders an entire regiment to surround the castle. The prince comes to visit the next day to ask the princess why she didn't come to visit like she promised. Like the 1819 version, she tells him about her bad dream, reveals a finger, and then he and his band of robbers are put to death. Unlike other stories such as Little Red Riding Hood and Sleeping Beauty, the Brothers Grimm did something a bit different with this tale. They actually leaned into the elements that made the robber bridegroom more horrific. That's according to a paper written by a late German studies professor and folklorist, Linda Krauss-Worley. For example, Worley argued it's awful to see your own flesh and blood be murdered, like when the bride's grandmother was killed in the earlier version of the story. But then when the young woman sees another young woman, it's worse in the sense that it's like looking into a mirror. She's seeing her own fate. Another argument would be the omens of death, like the suitor using ash to mark the path through the woods. And even another argument is that the change from princess to miller's daughter is significant because in folktales, millers were usually perceived as devious and distrustful. The robber bridegroom has been adapted numerous times since the Brothers Grimm. Two of the most well-known versions are a novella by Eudora Welty and a novel by Margaret Atwood. Eudora Welty's novella, The Robber Bridegroom, was also adapted into a Broadway play, which was staged for the first time in 1975. Margaret Atwood's 1993 novel, The Robber Bride, turns the tale on its head. She asks the question, is a bad marriage better than not being married? Dr. McNeil says this theme has carried its way through time.
A woman has been intentionally luring three other women's husbands away from them. And the implication is that she's motivated by thinking maybe she's sparing them from bad marriages. The fact that these men could be lured away shows that they're bad husbands or bad partners. And she's doing these women a favor by dispatching these men from their lives. And so we start to get fairly deep questions that really do stem from this original tale type 955. What is the value of a bad marriage in a time when women could not own property? Widows could, but women unmarried can't. So, I don't know, maybe a bad marriage where you manage to work some poisonous mushrooms into a soup? Maybe that's better. I don't know. I'm not advocating that as a plan of action in any way. But the ways that we see women extracting power from these systems that disempower them are often in the background with the help of other women and sometimes with the help of the supernatural, which of course was often an accusation turned against women in turn.
When I talked to Dr. McNeil about this tale, another way to look at the change from princess to merchant's daughter is perhaps less significant.
Sometimes it's a merchant's daughter, which maybe changes the class nature of this, because sometimes it's a princess. And a princess who might be clever and able to save herself still has more resources than a merchant's daughter. But a merchant's daughter still has more resources than someone living in poverty. And this seems to be a story that we tell about people above the poverty line. And that's somewhat interesting that the majority of the versions would set it in those two settings, either among royalty or among the merchant class, because it's getting at a particular type of womanhood where it's not just, hey, take what you can get, you are at the mercy of everyone. There is this sense of choice. There is this sense of agency. There is this sense of negotiation, right? There's her father wants to make her a good match. He believes that this guy, whether he's a prince or a bandit or another merchant or whatever, is going to be a good match. And then suddenly we get the battle between culture and personal emotion, gut instinct, all of that stuff. So we're really hearing something about a level of society that has the luxury of making this negotiation. If this woman were slightly lower on the socioeconomic scale, the bandits would have done to her what they did to their first victim, whose finger flies off with the ring on it.
What is also different about the robber bridegroom story from other Grimm tales is that it shows women looking out for other women. We talked about a safety net in Little Red Riding Hood when the Brothers Grimm added the huntsman. I think the old woman could also be viewed as that same societal safety net.
What I love about this story is that we have an equally strong theme of clever and intelligent women looking out for women. The old woman in the house who encourages the young girl to hide, helps her stay hidden. When the men go looking for the body part that flies off, she calls them back to the table and is like, don't worry about it. You can get it later. Come eat. Dinner's ready. And we see them believing her, and we see the way that works out. Sometimes that old woman's role is filled by a bird, which I think is also really interesting. We see a strong tie between women and birds as messengers of goodness and things like that. And the young woman succeeds. They allow her to tell the story of her dream, dismissing whatever she might be saying as meaningless until it's too late for it to be meaningless. So we have two opposing messages about the power of women in this story, and I think that's one of the things that has made it stick around so long, despite being so bizarre.
The Robber Bridegroom, a horror story or a fairy tale? In the end, maybe it's a little bit of both. Next time, the end is in sight as we visit the absolute darkest tale of the Brothers Grimm in the final episode. The Deep Dark Woods is a production of School of Humans and iHeart Podcasts. It was created, written, and hosted by me, Miranda Hawkins. This episode was produced by Michael June with senior producer Gabby Watts. Executive producers are Virginia Prescott, Brandon Barr, L.C. Crowley, and Maya Howard. Stories were voiced by Julia Kriskow. Theme song was composed by Jesse Neiswanger. This episode was sound designed and mixed by Chris Childs. You can follow the show on Instagram at School of Humans. And don't forget to subscribe and leave a review.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.